The great late Toni Morrison says, "If there is a book you want to read, but it hasn't been written yet, then you must write it." There are many untold stories in the world, so many individuals without voices. Make it your business to use whatever privilege you hold to give voice to the voiceless. What's good, everybody? Welcome to Your Mind, Your Narrative. My name is Jason Jumera. I'm a registered nurse hailing from the East Bay area of California with a soul for ethnic studies and community advocacy, channeling my career and passion in mental health as an avenue to make change and promote wellness. Currently in Philly, training to be a psychiatric mental health NP. While this podcast is not a substitute for professional therapy, the focus of this series is to shine light on and provide my folks back home with helpful therapeutic techniques and understanding of shared day-to-day mental health experiences as they intersect with our different backgrounds, from our professions to our cultural narratives and our other identities. Myself, being a 26-year-old Filipino-American brought up in a Catholic household, raised on the differing sounds of Too Short, Miss Lauryn Hill, and Dashboard Confessional, once youth group leader turned impassioned advocate for marginalized BIPOC, LGBTQ, mental health, and low-income inner-city populations, as I learned to process the street violence and trauma witnessed within my own community. Studying in this field has taught me that there are few mental health providers and educators who I fully feel represent me in appearance, speech, and background. So I decided to just become that person. I plan to also provide interviews with professionals who have experienced being on both sides of the field, who have had to or continue to address their own inner work while also being a healing ear for others. Overall, I just want to create a safe space for the folks in my community who may not have access or have not yet thought of therapy themselves. This first episode will introduce myself and explain why I left my comfortable UCLA position and made the leap to Philly to pursue the field of mental health as a psych NP and what that even is. So, let's get started. Yo, that's my brother-in-law, Glendon, on the beat, though. Thank you, family, for providing me with that. And before we get into this episode, I just want to put a quick trigger warning for gun violence.
So I grew up in this town called Antioch, California. It's a suburb 30 minutes northeast of Oakland. You know, you got the big houses. You got to drive out 30 minutes full of nothing but dry grass. I think there's like a llama or a camel or something that people were talking about. I know there's a bunch of bunkers and everything once you pass in Concord. Anyways, it looks nice. But you know that when you grow up in it, when you really, really live in it, that you're going to lose somebody to gun violence or substance use at some point. And unfortunately, it's just facts that when you go to a big party there, at least during my time, someone's going to get shot up. I don't know if I ever told my family this, so if they're listening, my bad. I threw a big house party, and a lot of people were partying in the garage, getting yiked on, everything in the garage. And then my boy had to tell everyone to get down because a couple of dudes pulled up, rolled down their windows. I don't think anything popped off, but, you know, they pulled out the blammers. I was 14. You know, we learned how to normalize this and internalize this at an early age. And the effects that has on our mental growing up, oh man, I'm going to talk about that later in some podcast episodes. But it still wasn't a place you'd even represent. You know, it wasn't Oakland or the city. It wasn't Richmond. You ain't finna represent Antioch like that. At least not when I was there. Nah, we just lived it. And my friends know, man, I was the softest one of our crew. Honestly. I never really dressed like whatever we experienced. I didn't really want to promote my image of myself as that. But I still made a ton of mistakes. I still caused traumas that I hated myself for. I made errors that I'm still trying to process and forgive myself for till this day through my therapist. And as my friends know today, as critical as I am about the socio-political practices of the American church, it was God and youth group that saved my life. It helped build my public speaking skills and my ability to connect to troubled kids and underserved communities that we'd help in. Then I went to University of San Francisco. I loved it there. Jesuit Catholic school, where a lot of people are trying to figure out, do I maintain my faith or do I completely let it go? And I believe there's a balance. You just gotta really unfold and unlearn a lot of Catholic-taught shame and guilt in order to promote your mental health. But that definitely is a topic for another podcast. And so I'm in nursing school, and it honestly wasn't until the third year of it that I really, really felt connected with it. You see, there's a Filipino joke basically saying that every Filipino kid is becoming a nurse because their parents told him to, and Jill Corey made it really funny. But I ain't finna cap, it gets pretty annoying when it keeps being brought up to you in an offensive context, trying to gaslight and dismiss your entire experience. Look, you have parents who tell you that you should do this, then you have peers and friends who are your age joking about your career and dragging you after all the hard work that you put into it. And then you got other parents later on in the Philippine community who are just like, so why don't you just become a doctor, huh? And it's just like, man, you can't appease anybody. And that's why you really have to know that you're doing it for yourself. And for me, I knew genuinely that I just wanted to do something that helped people. And at that time, you know, nursing was the thing that called out to me. Plus, in the Bay Area, you finna make some dough. You know, and I had to make some money after college because my family wasn't going to be supporting me. You know, I had to support myself throughout college. I worked multiple jobs and had a ton of loans. But you know, we in the field, so we finna pay it off. I'll have an episode on Bay Area Filipino nurses. There's a plethora of y'all, so you know, there is some truth behind everything and there's a reason behind that. So I'd love to interview you on here, so tap in after, please. Back to the story. Third year of nursing school, we have our psychiatric rotation. And I loved it. I loved it so much. I was fortunate to have an incredible preceptor who's still my mentor till this day. Her name is Michelle Cronin, and she definitely, her recommendations have saved my life, and I've told her that. And she showed me the realness of what it's like to do psych nursing in the city. And how to really care about these people who nobody else cares about. She told me a line that I will always remember. She said, we look at our cancer patients, and we respond as a society with compassion and fundraisers. But we look at the individual who's yelling on the street looking raggedy by himself, and we are disgusted, we want to avoid them, and we do not acknowledge that they themselves are going through their own illness every single day. Who's going to be the one that cares for them? You know, they're still human. I remember one clinical rotation. I was hooping with a patient. One of the psychiatric centers had a basketball court in the middle. So here I am hooping with this patient who had just attacked his family and was hospitalized following an episode of psychosis. I don't know if he was self-medicating or if he was even being treated in the first place. But you know, in that moment when I was talking to him, he was just a human patient. He was a human individual. And so I saw myself working in psych nursing. But you know, I'm young. And I listened to every single nursing professor who told you that you should start your foundation in med-surg. Which, you know, has some good to it. But you know, if you're passionate and really interested in a certain specialty, man, just go straight for that. Don't waste your time. I really wish professors would stop endorsing that idea. But psych really is everywhere in nursing, to be honest. So I got hired at UCLA straight out of college. I was working in the adult step-down unit where we focus on kidney transplants and trach head and neck surgeries. But we also got pretty much overflow of everything that had to do with med-surg. And it honestly was a pretty great experience. I was there for 2 years. And what I love was mainly the team at night who we worked with and who we trusted and who we could rely on. That was important. I soon figured out that I was relied on to basically have every psych patient. And it was because of the way I approached it, and I honestly have no issue with it. You know, sadly, the stigma of psychiatry still exists even within nursing, even though the studies and evidence shows that people with mental health disorders, especially without substance use, are actually more at risk of being victims of violence rather than perpetrators of violence. But you know, everyone's lived experience is different, and oftentimes nurses don't really know how to adapt and work with psychiatric patients if they're not trained in it, or if they personally don't have the heart for it. And it's true that there are a lot of unsafe situations that may happen. Nurses' lives and well-beings are put at risk pretty often, not just in psych, but in general medicine. Some nurses will get picked up and thrown against the wall. Sometimes a patient will have a weapon behind their back, and you never know what's going to happen. That's the truth of the situation, but there's two sides to it. And still, I wanted to give them more attention. You know, I remember one patient who everyone wanted to get out of that room as fast as possible. He would yell at them. He would throw stuff at them. He was non-adherent. He didn't want to do any of his medications. He was, I believe, here for a kidney transplant. A rejection of the kidney for maybe like the second or third time. And, you know, at this point, it makes sense. He's fed up. He's exhausted of this. He's depressed. He's angry. You know, I wasn't sure what his psychiatric diagnosis was, if he even had any, if he was just an agitated person, and that's completely normal and human. And so instead of staying out of his room, I made sure to get done with all of my other patients' assignments and work fast, so that I can spend more time with him. I wanted him to not be seen as just a patient, but be seen as a human being again, as an individual. I learned that he loved baseball and that he plays catch with his son all the time. And he hated getting his insulin checked. He hated it so much and he refused to get it done. But at some point, I just asked him, I said, "Hey man, don't you want to just go back and play catch with your son again? And be able to have more years to do that? Look, I'm not going to give up on you. And I know that boy that comes in and out of here with all of his energy, he doesn't want to give up on you either. So we won't give up on you as long as you don't give up on yourself, please. Just don't give up on yourself." And you know, sentimental as that sounds, of course, like, he's not going to be all like, "Oh, angels and whatnot," like, it's total change of heart, you know, but he did just go, "Ugh, okay, fine," gave me his finger and let me check his blood sugar so that I can start his insulin back up all over again. You know, and it's stuff like that that they gave me every single psych patient after that. But I loved it. And I knew that I was more lying towards that. And still yet, I decided to transition into the pediatric ICU instead. I wasn't sure if the psych NP route was for me anymore or if I was even interested in going back to school. I thought about doing CRNA, so I said, "Okay, let me do the ICU," because you have to get 2 years of ICU experience in order to become a nurse anesthesiologist. Plus, it was just a huge broadening of my experience to go into peds, critical care. And then eventually they started training me to cardiothoracic ICU, which was so exciting and exhilarating. You know, you're chasing numbers. You kind of feel like a mad scientist sometimes. You're like pushing all these different blood pressure affecting medications that do so many different things, whether it's making it go up, going down, makes it the heart contract more, or just loosens up the blood vessels. You're pumping blood. You're doing all this and that. Sometimes we would do open heart surgery right there on the spot in this ICU. And that stuff was really exhilarating, but you know, I just wasn't passionate enough to feel like I could keep studying the kidney and the heart for the rest of my life. But what I did love was the opportunity to talk with these parents whose pride and joys are in
this critical care room. And as a parent, you know, they feel like they have no control or power over the situation. And that is terrifying, and that exerts anxiety, grief, depression.
You know, some of the gripes and stigma that adult nurses have about peds nursing is that you have to deal with troublesome parents.
But after what I just said, it makes sense of why a parent would feel that way. And you know, I think that's completely valid. And I love talking to them and being that ear for them and supporting them through, you know, this kid who's has a tube down his throat and can't breathe on his own. You know, if that was my family member, I'd probably be the same way. And that's something that I held on to the whole time I was at UCLA. You see, I failed to mention that the day I started working there, the day I moved 6 hours away from home, 300 miles, just settled into my LA apartment, was chilling in a hot tub, actually. Very LA. Not knowing that at that time, one of my best friends, Jabril Abubakar, was shot and killed back home. A couple bullets to the neck, just being in the wrong place at the wrong time with the wrong people. You know, he was the other soft guy in my group, aside from me. You know, he was the other guy who went to college. He went to college before me, graduated before me. All that. He was on his way to become a doctor, man. And he went back to our hometown, and that's just what happens. You know, my parents moved out and then moved to Sacramento, where it's a lot quieter and more peaceful. But I think one of the reasons why I was able to connect with patients so well on that holistic level was because I carried that mentality that if this was Jabril in this hospital bed, I would be doing anything I possibly could to keep him alive. And man, I really miss you, dude. And I can't talk too much about the case, but let's just say that one of the possible shooters was really, really young. And I have every reason, you know, to hate youth after that. You know, to hate cities like that, you know? But instead, in the spirit of Jabril, man, I want to make a difference. I want to support them so that they don't keep making these mistakes. You know, that's why I'm so passionate about community health so much and this whole social justice thing, dude. Like, I want to be able to make a difference so that kids can stop growing up to do this. And a lot of this has to do with mental health. You know, mental health is one of the foundational components in building a better community. But not enough people see that. It's something called adverse childhood experiences, in which if you grow up with certain factors, such as trauma, or if you're in a household where there is mental health disorder or substance use disorder, and amongst many other things such as abuse, you are at risk at not only developing further mental health issues, but actual cardiovascular and physical health issues, social like abilities such as like being able to hold a job, a relationship, you know, exposure to more violence, and all this stuff predisposes you, makes you more at risk for this type of lifestyle. And, you know, one of the roles that can intervene in this is the psych NP role, at least in the pathway that I'm in right now, already being a registered nurse. And so here I am in LA, working at one of the best hospitals in the country, you know, straight out of college, already in the units that so many people want to be in, and I still wasn't happy. I was living a life that wasn't related to my passion. Tony Robbins has a line. He says, success without fulfillment is the ultimate failure. And something I noticed
when I was working in the PEDS ICU was that so many people there, so many of the nurses were all in NP or CRNA school. And I didn't really notice that much anywhere else. You know, I'm from the Bay Area, and in the Bay Area, they pay nurses a lot. So you get comfortable. You don't need to go back to school. Just ride that job for as long as you want, you know? But where I was, you know, LA is a city of people really always trying to get better than what they are right now. And that inspired me, you know? That inspired me to really look and to see if this was what I wanted to do for the rest of my life. And of course, it wasn't. Like I said, I couldn't see myself going home and wanting to study the heart and the kidney, you know? But something I did love going home to was all the audibles, all the podcasts, all these, you know, self-help books on mental health. And I wanted to get the actual professional mental health provider viewpoint and perspectives on this issue. This was going to be a way that I could help my people. You know, I didn't feel like I was able to help my own community just being a nurse. You know, I mean, nurses are incredible people, incredible frontliners, especially during this time. But you know, just the way that I wanted to help, it didn't line up, you know? So becoming a psych NP was going to be my vehicle towards creating the change that I want to make in my own life and to also make in the lives of the people around me. You know, today I have so many people who are asking me mental health advice questions, and I love it. I don't get tired of it. I go home and I listen to another audiobook because I am on Zoom fatigue and my eyes can't stand to look at screens or books anymore. But I love the field that I'm in now. So I applied to 3 universities, gone to every single one of them, and now today here I am at the University of Pennsylvania. It's a blessing, man. I wouldn't necessarily say I came from the mud, but you know, I came from the house parties to the Ivy League now, you feel me? And so, here I am, 3,000 miles away from home, studying neurobiology, understanding the mechanisms of how certain therapies and certain psychiatric medications can really affect neurotransmitters such as your dopamine, your serotonin, and norepinephrine in order to trigger a response in your sleep, appetite, affect, any possible suicidal ideation, if you're seeing any hallucinations or if you're hearing any voices that aren't there. I love learning about this stuff. Like we're doing research on practices that are non-pharmacological in order to treat depression and anxiety, such as cognitive behavioral therapy or advancing technology such as electroconvulsive therapy, which has been around but has been really stigmatized by that bird flew over the cuckoo's nest movie. There's also transcranial magnetic stimulation therapy, which uses magnets in order to, you know, affect those neurotransmitters like a medication would do in order to treat your depressive symptoms. Like, we even take classes on politics and how basically it's so important for us as NPs to be involved in this space in order to create healthcare legislation and help promote the betterment of our patients. It's incredible stuff that we're learning. One of my first classes, we had to do something called a genogram. A genogram is a tool that some therapists use in order to understand the family system that you came from. And by understanding your family system, you're able to understand patterns that repeat, such as cutoffs or codependency, or also called fusion, or any mental health illnesses that have transcended down across generations of family members, all the way up from like your great-grandparent. And, you know, in the genogram,
you're just connecting lines to see how relationships worked. And it comes down to you, and it shows how you yourself interact in your relationships with, you know, with your family members or your kids. And so one of the first assignments we do straight into school is make a genogram for our families. So here I am interviewing my Filipino parents, asking them everything about their life back home in the Philippines and how their relationship were with their parents and their siblings. And wow, I learned a lot. You know, I pushed boundaries. I was asking my dad, you know, how was your relationship with your dad? And do you think the lack of it correlates with the way that you had a relationship with me? You know, like, woo! It was a great assignment, and we shared them. We shared them with our peers, learning about each other's traumas, each other's patterns, each other's motivations to make change in different spaces. And I learned from my peers. You know, some people have neglectful family members. They were cut off from them. Maybe they came out as lesbian, gay, or trans, and then the family cut them off or were abusive to them. And so they were able to build a new family, their own chosen family. And so they do their genogram on that. And it's being in this space with other scholars who love mental health as much as I do that really makes me hopeful and makes me love this field so much right now. I'm learning about myself and how I can affect the people around me too. Forget a self-help book and all those Instagram posts, just become a psych NP or any mental health provider. So let me transition now into explaining what my role as a psych NP actually is. So let's first discuss the more commonly known roles in mental health. Let's break down the difference between a psychologist and a psychiatrist. A psychologist, while not having a medical degree, is able and trained in diagnosing, in conducting research, and importantly, doing the inner work in order to help the individual really process all of the pain and all of the trauma or all of the emotions and the way that they react. Psychiatrists can also conduct therapy and do this inner work. They can do therapy, they can diagnose, they conduct research. A lot of them write some of my favorite books. And what they can also do is prescribe medication. That's pretty much one of the main differences. A lot of psychiatrists will choose to do medication checks in which you see a patient for like 15 to 30 minutes, do a quick assessment, and, you know, try to just adjust their medications to really help them get to a safe space in which they can do the inner work. They can stabilize their sleep, stabilize their appetite, and stabilize any psychotic symptoms that they may be having, whether it's seeing something that's not there or hearing something that's not there. There are many psychiatrists who really enjoy doing this. There's a lot of psychiatrists who also really enjoy just doing cognitive behavioral therapy or other methods of, you know, mental health work, such as the ECT. One of the authors I read right now, his name is Dr. Burns. He doesn't like medications at all. And he would prefer to much rather just do therapy. And, you know, you have those options. So where's the psych NP fit? I would say we are much more aligned with the psychiatrist route. I am being trained by a psychiatrist right now. And we also get trained by psychiatric NPs. Yes, we can also do cognitive behavioral therapy. Some inpatient places will actually have you do it there in the hospital. And you can also find clinics to align with what you want to do if you want to take your practice in that route. In academics, we are primarily trained in psychopharmacology,
and we're also taking cognitive behavioral therapy classes. While we do not have a medical degree, we have experience as a nurse, being right there in front of the patient 12 hours a day, fully engaged in the treatment, figuring out the ins and outs of clinical practice. We can diagnose, we can prescribe, we can treat, we can educate, and we can refer, and we can conduct research as well. Something we're often utilized as is a more affordable route if a patient cannot access a primary care physician or a psychiatrist. Nurse practitioners, you know, we are paid less than doctors, so we also cost less. And many of us are often working in underserved, underprivileged areas where they need us. And they get you too, because they'll say, we'll pay off your loan, 60% of it, if you work in these designated areas. And I'm like, yeah, I'm down. That's what I want to do anyways. One of the clinics that I'm training at right now, man, it's an inner city Philly clinic. And the psychiatrist there is a legend. Like, he knows the ins and outs of all of his medications. He can think of something on the spot. But not only are we doing medication treatment, we are helping them with sustainable social work. We are assessing the housing and the safety of our patients. We are working with housing coordinators, social workers, case managers. We are working with immigrants. We are helping them get their papers signed or cleared if they need psychiatric clearance legally. We are doing so much important work. We're helping patients with substance use disorder get clean, starting them on something called Suboxone, which I can talk about later. I just gotta say, it's so humbling and so beautiful to see the struggle that people go through. You know, that sounds weird, but you know, the struggle that they're trying to beat. And I love that stuff. You know, before Christmas, this patient, I thought he was going to hurt himself, man. Honestly, and the psychiatrist I'm training under, he trusted me to prescribe the right medication and to refer to certain things. You know, I chose a certain medication. I chose Seroquel, and then I chose to start therapy and then just see us back in a month, and also to change these certain life things that you have going on in your own home. And, man, complete turnaround later on. So before Christmas, he's just so thankful, man. Like, he brought a tear to my eye. Man, he says, I'm doing great. Therapy's been helping me a lot. My mood's been a lot better. I've been able to eat. These certain toxic elements of my life are gone now, as referred. And, you know, I'm able to celebrate one of the first Christmases ever. So thank you. And you know, being a realist in psychiatry, nothing really is forever. So we know that things can change. And what I love is that there's this whole intercollaborative system of care to help stay on top of that. You know, at this clinic, there's psychiatrists, there's nurse practitioners, there are social workers, there's a handful of therapists, there's case managers, there are housing unit coordinators. There's so many people involved. There's nurses. You know, there are so many people involved to help stay on top of our community together. And I feel like that's sort of what my field is becoming now, you know? You know, as an RN, my field used to be like respiratory therapists, doctors, CNAs, and now it's completely different. I mean, at least in outpatient care. I know in inpatient care, there's so many incredible roles that you can do as a psych NP in general, but the next place I'm training in is actually going to be as a consult liaison in psychiatry. So I'll be the person going to medical units such as the ER or the ICU, or the med-surg unit, and I basically will sit down with the patient, and I can have the full like an hour to like 2 hour conversation with them and figure out exactly what their psychiatric needs are, if they're able to make decisions, and what I can do right now for you. My mentor, she's a psychiatric NP who actually runs the entire program, the entire area for that county, I think. And so she explains it as, it's kind of like House, the show. We're going to basically be investigating this and digging deep and figuring out how to help these people. And so I'm really excited for that. And you know, something else just to mention, like I know that there's that whole NP versus doctor battle online. You know, there's like nurses versus doctors. It's a thing, but really isn't a thing in practice. You know, like the major organizations, I guess, will have their gripes, and then insecure people online will have their gripes. But in real practice, there is so much respect between the intercollaborative care. And, you know, it's just about knowing your stuff and then being reliable and being somebody who really can connect with both your team and your patients. So man, I really hope that some of y'all come and consider becoming mental health workers. You know, you don't have to be an NP, but just being in the field of psychiatry and mental health, because we need you. You know, like I said, there's so few educators and so few mental health providers of color, of marginalized. You know, there's so much need for representation, for people who really understand what it's like to come from these neighborhoods, or come from these toxic environments, or to live and love a certain way and be casted and neglected for it. Somebody out there has a story in which they need to hear your voice to get through it. Yo, so thank you everyone for listening. This was a lot of fun, and I plan to keep doing this because it's basically part of my profession. You know, I'm just sharing knowledge, and I want to be able to share your voice too. So let's say you want to talk about your cultural identity. Let's say you want to talk about how it is to be in the profession while also going through your own struggles. If you want to talk about masculinity, if you want to talk about toxic relationships, if you want to talk about anything, tap in with me and let me know what you want to hear also. I will be making episodes every Wednesday. The long episodes, like 30 to 40 minutes each, will be every other Wednesday. And in between, I'll be doing something called a Real Quick Wednesday, because I know none of us got that attention span to be doing hella 30-minute episodes every single week, bro. So little 5-minute clips, just sharing off the dome in between those long Wednesdays. And if you want to reach me for anything, you can go find my Instagram, Your Mind, Your Narrative. And you can also contact me at yourmindyournarrative@gmail.com. I will try to get back to everybody. And, you know, if you just want personal advice and whatnot, feel free to tap in with me. I love to help anyone I can. So thank you again. And if no one's told you this today, remember that you are loved, you are worthy, and you belong in this space. Peace. One last thing, I would love to use this space as a support your friends section. I believe that you should always be putting on for your family and friends who are starting businesses and brands. Who cares about your algorithm? Just share it on your story. And so for today, who I'm going to highlight is my dear friend Made by Lizette. You can find her on Instagram, made.by.lizette at Instagram. And you can go to her website, lizetteann.com, in order to find beautiful prints, canvas paintings, and stickers of your favorite hip-hop and R&B artists and pop culture icons.
She even made one for my late best friend Jabril, which is next to me on this wall right now that I cherish dearly.
So support my friend Lizette, support your own friends, support your own family, support local business, and let's just build together as 2021 manifests.